It took my very own mini Arianna Huffington moment for returning to work from maternity leave to realise that something just wasn't right. Lack of sleep and travelling up and down the country took its toll. I found that although my most productive coffee-fuelled hours were on the train, I still felt like I couldn't make headway. I started to wonder, if I couldn't keep on top, how can I progress? If I can't progress, then what's the point? I felt at my lowest, least confident, and quite simply exhausted.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Kent, and you're listening to EG's Tomorrow's Leaders podcast. In this episode, we hear from two fantastic women who had actually never met before they joined me in the studio to record this interview. Marion Ellis of Countrywide Surveying Services found herself at one stage in her career collapsed into the lap of a stranger on a train.
Yeah, it was a bit embarrassing. Coming back on a train from Manchester one day, I had a bit of a wobble and went splat on top of a passenger with a cup of coffee. To which, I apologise, and he was,
You had a spell?
I just had I wouldn't say I passed out, but just a wobble of just...
A low blood pressure moment.
Yeah, and...
wobble and splat.
You know, and the train wasn't moving then. And he was like, no, it's fine. And this guy, you know, well-dressed, suited guy, looked at me and just said, gosh, you look really tired. And it sort of took me back as I sort of found my seat and thought, oh God, embarrassing. Oh, yeah. And I sat there and thought, and looked in my little compact mirror and thought, yeah, I really do look tired. I look grey.
It was a defining moment for Marion, one where she had to take stock of her lot, her family and her career and make some important decisions. In this podcast, she shares some valuable life lessons. And we also have with us Kirsten Jury of Network Rail, who is piloting in September the company's first returners program for surveyors who have been out of the game for a while.
We talked earlier a little about age and experience. And so some of the people were more senior who still feel that they want to continue working, and they've got loads of networks, experience, and see Network Rail as an interesting place to work with their skills.
Before we go into the interview, here is a little more from Marion, who is reading an excerpt from an article that she wrote about the struggles of juggling work and a family life, and the just as challenging scenario of returning to work. At the end of this interview, you can hear Marion read out the full article, or visit EGI where you can have a read of it yourself.
My company was very understanding when I approached them asking for help in balancing my workload. We struck a balance where I'm full-time but don't need to travel as much and have more flexible hours. Working together helped me to relieve the pressure I was putting on myself to be the perfect employee and parent. It gave me a clearer perspective and made me feel much more valued in the office. While on maternity leave, I met new parents and grew my network, which was invaluable support. I missed this when I returned to work, so I set up a Women in Surveying group to support female colleagues up and down the UK, and I now mentor candidates on business and leadership development programmes. Not everyone is so fortunate when returning from maternity leave. It can be incredibly lonely, particularly if you're in an industry like surveying, where women make up just 14% of the profession.
Welcome to EG's Connecting Tomorrow's Leaders podcast. I'm Rebecca Kent. Now, returning from work after a long period away can be a daunting prospect. You may have spent time away caring for relatives, studying, travelling, or indeed most likely raising children. Now the latter, so returning to the property industry from maternity leave is what we'll talk about in a little bit more detail in this episode of our Tomorrow's Leaders podcast. I'm delighted to welcome into the EG studio Kirsten Jury, who is the Principal Development Manager at Network Rail. Kirsten, you're leading the firm's property surveying returner program. Indeed. Welcome. And we've also got Marion Ellis here, who is Head of Customer Experience at Countrywide Surveying Services, who has written a blog post for the RICS about your own experience returning to work from maternity leave, which we'll elaborate on as well. So welcome to you both. Thanks for joining us. As always, with our EG Tomorrow's Leaders podcast, it's always very nice to get to know the people we're sitting in the room here with a little bit more. So, Kirsten, it may be good to know about your route into property. Where did it all begin and why?
My route into property began sitting around a table with a careers advisor that my mum had set up because I'd managed to get some A-levels. I wasn't sure that I was. And my friends had gone to university and I thought perhaps that would be, you know, something I'd like to do. So mum had got a careers advisor in and she asked me what I liked doing. And I said, well, I like cooking. So she said, okay, well, maybe you want to consider hotel management. And I said, well, I quite like, mum and dad have been doing up houses, so, you know, poking around people's houses, having cups of tea with people and selling their houses, that seems quite interesting too. And so she said, well, maybe you want to consider land administration or estate management. So I ended up applying for both types of roles, ended up going to Sheffield Poly, as was then, for an interview, and completely fell in love with Sheffield. And then so the rest is history. And I did an HND in land administration, and then I got onto the degree course, had a year out working for BR as a sandwich student, who then retained me to go back, and so I carried on with them, and the rest is history pretty much, other than a short foray out into private practice after I qualified with my RSCS. I decided that it would be far more sexy to be out of BR as was then and go out into the private sector. Went to Colliery Edmund Lewis, and for those of an age will remember, they went into administration at the time, so it was sort of last in, first out, so that wasn't a great experience. Went off and did a few ski seasons and then was ready to come back into the property industry, and over a pint in a pub with my old boss came back in to rail track then, remembering which organisation. So came back into rail track and into the development team and have remained there since.
BR for the uninitiated.
Oh, sorry, is British Rail. So when, before privatisation, so obviously the rail industry has gone through privatisation back in the early 90s, and then we went into rail track, which also then went into administration, and we're now Network Rail, so, and have also gone back into public sector. So in my career, I've gone full circle into public sector, out into private sector, and then back again.
Back on the rails.
Back on the rails.
Tell me about the last time you celebrated a work achievement.
Probably getting this returnships thing off the ground. Our returnships programme, I'm really proud that we've sort of taken a small piece of paper into work one day saying this looks like an opportunity to try and, you know, get more or different talent into the business. Can we give it a go? And it was accepted with open arms, and with the support of HR, we've managed to get the program up and running, and we've just been going through our interviews and are really excited about getting people hopefully in, getting some job offers out and people in September.
Great. All right. We'll hear a lot more about that very soon, but not before we find out a little bit more about Marion. Tell me about your career path so far.
So I did A-level geology and geography, and I was due to go on to do estate management at my local college in North Wales, but I had an illness. I had a tumour. So I was a bit poorly and took a few years out. And my first proper job then was a YTS as a school receptionist. And I did a few years of bouncing around, temping, and I just thought to myself, it's not going to get any better than this. So I walked back into my college, picked up my estate management degree, and things moved from there. I then struggled to find the right role or trainee sort of type job to get my MRICS, and I was lucky enough to be selected for a graduate program with Lang Homes, as was then. So I moved around the country doing 6 months on site, 6 months selling new homes, but I'd always kept my APC diary going. And I actually joined Countrywide for 3 months valuation experience just under 15 years ago. So I joined them, got through my APC, and just absolutely loved the job. So that's going out doing home buyers, building surveys, and mortgage valuations. So I did that in South London, in sort of in the, my patch was Croydon, and I did that for a few years. And then a role came up in our head office in Milton Keynes to be audit manager, but to also look after a small customer care team. And it was one of those things, I looked at the job and thought, oh, if I apply for that, I just know I'm going to get it, because the experience that I'd had in those years before I started college, had done all sorts of administration and customer care and those things. It's quite a niche, unique experience to have. So I applied, got it, relocated, and the role's grown from there, really. So I'm responsible for complaints and claims for when it goes wrong, but also the good stuff of how we actually get it right.
And the last time you celebrated an achievement at work?
That was quite recently. So we've been working on Net Promoter Score, NPS, a customer satisfaction, and whether a customer would recommend us. And we recently achieved our target of a score of 60. It's been an up and down journey over the last couple of years, but it's just really satisfying to do that. Really great.
We were just talking earlier off air about the fact that so many young people in the industry change jobs so many times, and you've of course been with Countrywide for quite some time. Clearly there are benefits to sticking around and learning and developing within one company. How do you know when you found that company, the one that you want to stay with?
I think for me it's finding a company that aligns with your values, you know. So Countrywide, you know, we say our purpose is to bring people and property together, and that is absolutely what I do. I love helping people find the right home, get the advice that they need before they move in. You know, we talk about it being, you know, the most expensive thing, a really scary thing to buy a home, but it is so exciting. You know, if you remember your first place and getting the keys and moving in, we really want to keep that exciting. So that's what, for me, keeps the job fun.
And Kirsten, what about yourself? I mean, you know, you've been, how long have you been with Network Rail now?
I've been coming up for about 23 years, so long time.
Quite a long time.
Yes, I think I'm probably one of the last of those people that perhaps have been in the same, with the same employer for such a long time. As we said, you know, our kids are likely to have several careers, let alone several employers. So, I mean, for me, working in the rail industry, it's always been really varied work. So although I do development projects, every project is different. You work with a different team, you work with different experts, and you work with different consultants. And, you know, they're fascinating. And very, I really enjoy the stakeholder piece, bringing people together to try to make a project come together. And the station schemes are very complex, not only with all our own regulations internally, then with our rail industry partners, and then with the local authorities and other stakeholders. You know, it's very challenging to get everybody who with their different objectives to come together and align to come forward with one vision. So from that perspective, it's you know, it's challenging and it's great fun.
Let's talk about Network Rail's Returner program. Mm-hmm. Who is it aimed at?
So the Returners programme is aimed at people who have been out of their professional role for a minimum of 2 years. So we've actually gone out, we've had applicants which have been men and women with for various reasons that have been out of work. Majority, as you said at the beginning, of women potentially having been at home with their families. Bringing up their kids and different reasons with men for carers. Or in fact, we talked earlier a little about age and experience. And so some of the people were more senior who still feel that they want to continue working, and they've got loads of networks, experience, and see Network Rail as an interesting place to work with their skills. And so they'd still like to continue working. So that's been quite an interesting insight too. We were open-minded as to who would apply, but obviously, you know, the minimum criteria is 2 years out, and that they obviously have RICS qualification or have held that and degree qualification. And then, so as you say, it's been really interesting to see who has applied.
So tell me about what the program involves for someone who applies successfully. What mm-hmm. can they expect?
Yes, okay. So it's a 12-week programme, and it's really to give people a supported entry back into the surveying world. We're obviously trying to match people with the skills that they previously had, whether that might have been commercial estate sort of management or whether it might be more development and planning skills. So looking where we can put them within our departments to get them back up to speed, and that might be some training on IT, that might be training on our own systems, but frankly anybody onboarding is going to have to get up to speed with, you know, our own internal systems. Giving them a project to manage, so but with a buddy to help them to get back into that sort of into that role, and give them that experience if they need to get up to speed with, you know, changed legislation within the RSCS or the property world. Then clearly there'll be CPD available for them to access through our sort of CPD program, and so yes, they would then have a mentor who would help them and who they can also shadow, so they can see what type of work that we're doing, so that ideally then they have a nice supported return to work and get some experience, so that ideally at the end for us, I suppose success might look like somebody coming into a permanent role. They'd have to apply for a permanent role. But if they feel that it's not right for them, they've still had that experience. Even now, the candidates that we've had have said it's been great getting their CVs up together. Our HR people have really coached them through in terms of what the interview might be like and what to expect and how to prepare. So all of that hopefully is building up their skill set to get themselves back into work, even if they haven't been successful, or even if at the end of the 12-week programme they chose not to stay.
And will they expect to come in full-time, commit full-time to that 12-week programme, or are there flexible options? Because I imagine, you know, being off for at least 2 years and then coming straight back into a 9-to-5 can be potentially a daunting prospect.
Yeah, so when we advertised, we said it would be a minimum of 20 hours. So there is that flexibility. And so they can work that 20 hours, or they could come back full time if they choose, or as I say, minimum 20 hours, and they can flex that work time to suit, you know, perhaps their childcare arrangements or their home life.
Okay, and how many people are you sort of hoping you're going to reach or to encourage back into the workforce?
So we set ourselves a goal of just 2 to 4. People nationally to come in.
That's quite a low number, isn't it?
Well, I think we were unsure of exactly how this would be received, so we just set ourselves a small target initially, and we're just piloting this in property. It may well go out across the whole business at some point, so, you know, across the engineering and other disciplines that Network Rail have, but at the moment we're just having a look at that in property. Mm. So I think we had something 60 odd applicants, not all meeting the criteria. So when that narrowed down, I think we've probably interviewed about 15 people.
And how much does Network Rail need returners, need this level of skill in their teams? I mean, Network Rail is one of the largest, you know, property owners in the UK.
Indeed, right? Indeed. So we are challenged at the moment with increasing our disposals programme and releasing land for housing. We have this new government target of trying to release land for 36,000 homes in the next sort of, or what was the parliamentary period. Obviously that's now changing given we have a new government. So, you know, we have a real challenge to dispose of land. So we need to get more people in, and we saw it as an opportunity to access a new or a different talent pool that perhaps we weren't reaching to before. Most organisations are looking at their diversity and inclusion, as are we, and we felt it was a good fit with that. So it's not that it's the only option, but we felt it was a good opportunity to get new talent in. And, you know, it's proven that a diverse workforce, it gives you a more efficient company, better decision making. So, you know, hopefully it's a win-win.
Marion, I'll bring in you now. I mean, how detrimental can to your career? Can time off be a long period away? I mean, what are some of the things that you miss out on? Maybe you can explain from your own experience.
I think you can keep up to date with what's going on in the news, you know, and in your industry, the trade magazines, LinkedIn, you know, there's lots out there that you can sort of try and keep up to date with. I think the key thing really is confidence and ability to do the job, to be seen as competent by your peers. And I don't think that's isolated to our own industry. I think that's for any woman taking time out. But I think going back into what's perceived as a technical role can sort of make you think twice about going back. You know, I had 10 months out with my last maternity leave and 9 months on my first. And I did worry about, God, you know, what's happened? You know, I mean, the RICS are great in that they allow you to be exempt from some CPD. So for my last one, I wasn't able to keep some of that up, but that was fine. But the impact of that meant was that I used to be an APC assessor, and you have to keep your CPD up to date, which meant the knock-on effect was I was further year out. And as it is, I've struggled to get on some panels to do the assessing for residential. So thinking ahead of some of those things, I think you can do it and keep in touch. But the biggest thing I think is confidence and how you think you're viewed but perceived by your peers.
You described in your blog as having your very own mini Arianna Huffington moment with, you know, after returning to work from maternity leave. Do you just want to explain what you mean?
Yeah, it was a bit embarrassing. So when I returned back off maternity leave, my role had changed a bit. And I had a great opportunity to take over a team in Manchester. Now I'm in Milton Keynes, that meant a bit more travelling, and the practicalities of it coming back off maternity leave weren't great, but it was a good opportunity. And coming back on a train from Manchester one day, I had a bit of a wobble and went splat on top of a passenger with a cup of coffee. To which, you know, I apologise, and he was, you know.
What, sorry? you had a spell?
I just had I wouldn't say I passed out, but just a wobble of just...
A low blood pressure moment.
Yeah, and...
wobble and splat.
You know, and the train wasn't moving then. And he was like, oh, no, it's fine. And this guy, you know, well-dressed, suited guy, looked at me and just said, gosh, you look really tired. And it sort of took me back as I found my seat and thought, oh God, embarrassing. Oh yeah. And I sat there and thought and looked in my little compact mirror and I thought, yeah, I really do look tired. I look grey. And then I realised I was on the wrong train. I was heading into London, not Milton Keynes. I used to have to carry a breast pump up with me, so I had two massive boobs of, you know, that I was going to have to deal with. I was going to be late picking up the kids. And I sat on this train and just thought, where's the point? What am I trying to achieve? And this is my second maternity leave. So what I knew is that returning is hard and you just had to get through it. But it really made me think of what I needed. What was I trying to get out of this? So on that train journey to Euston and back into Milton Keynes, I really thought about what I needed, you know, and I don't know if you've heard of Maslow's hierarchy of human needs. It all starts with replenishing your needs and getting sleep and nutrition. And if you say any of that to a new mother, it's just really annoying because I'd have loved to have got some sleep, but my child didn't sleep. And that's not her fault or my fault. It was just one of those things. But I also started to think about what was my need to work. I mean, I'm fortunate I didn't have to work or wanted to work. I have a great job that I got a lot of satisfaction from, but I needed to try and balance all the needs that I had to try and make this work, and that was to scratch that itch of wanting to make a difference in the industry and the property sector that I work in, to just feel like I can get stuff done. I'm really good at getting stuff done, and I can do that at home, but I can do it even better in work. I needed time to be a mother and for that to be fun, and also be a wife to my husband, and fit in sleep and everything else. And what I realised is when I was on maternity leave, the second time, I didn't know anyone else who was pregnant. And I joined my local NCT, National Childbirth Trust, branch. I had that with my first. I joined and sort of did the classes, so I had a network of friends, but I didn't have that the second time. So while I was on maternity leave, I joined. I ended up being chair. And when I look back and think, when was a time that I was actually had all my plates spinning? It was then. We did some great stuff. We took a little magazine and, you know, made it sort of digital, set up a sling library, you know, sort of different groups. And when I think about what I was doing then, I was delegating and I was managing and I was keeping it fun, all the things I'd like to have done in work. So it really made me reassess what I had. And what I realised, the biggest thing is I just didn't have that network of support. Now, it wasn't to say that my employer wasn't supportive, but when you're in a minority, and there's only, I think, 14% of women chartered surveyors, then you're always going to be on the back foot. And I didn't have anybody that I could connect with. And so what I then started to do was to build a network of support, not just of, you know, women surveyors, but to reassess what I needed. So that was building a network. It was looking at practical things. So at the time, I had a cleaner. I changed that to a housekeeper to help me keep on top of the kids' things. I booked a babysitter, you know, and just started to really think about what I needed to satisfy those needs on a practical front. But the network was the biggest thing.
And the network and, I suppose, the understanding or the empathy of your employer, of your boss, right?
Yeah, Kirsten, well, we did a piece of work last year or earlier this year on engagement, staff engagement, which sort of set me rolling that actually a lot of it's down to the line manager relationship and the trust as well between the employee and the manager to allow that flexible working. And so and when I did a workshop at the outset of our returners program, I gathered lots of women from the organization and men who had for various reasons had time out of work and were coming back into the organization, and what was their experience, what could have been better. And so often it was down to that line manager relationship and communication and trust to be able to have that conversation about the flexible working and how to make it work for both, because it, you know, it's give and take. So and so we've sort of taken it into our line manager training as well, that, you know, these things are company policy, the flexible working and, you know, people coming back from extended periods of leave, and we need to accommodate and we need to help people back, support them back, so that actually, because often our line managers, we're all trained surveyors and we step up into a line manager role, we're not necessarily having the right skills as line managers, so we're recognising that and trying to help you know, improve that. So, you know, the returners has come out of some of that process, but equally just looking at what we do day to day anyway for our employees.
I think that's important. And to add to that, I also think, though, that when I came back off maternity leave the first time, yeah, that was, you know, that was fine. But now I'm more senior than I was 6-8 years ago, whatever it was. And the difference that made was that I was trying to keep these plates spinning, and I wasn't really talking to my employer about how difficult it was. They knew it was challenging. They were asking me, was it okay? I, as a manager, it was up to me to manage my time and to work out where I needed to be. So I had a responsibility, as much as my employer did, to have that conversation and check everything was okay. And after my embarrassing wobble, what I did do is I spoke to my employer and just said, this isn't working for me, but what would work is this. And I do now have flexible hours, but I also manage my time a lot better. And my employer trusts me to do that. And I think trust is a big thing, because when you put an application in for flexible working or home working, you know, there's a, you know, are you going to be at home playing with the kids, and you know, so there's got to be a good relationship there. And the thing that sort of, again, another thing that made a difference for me was my line manager actually had a child of his own, and he totally got where I was at, and not everybody has that.
Yeah, I agree.
So what is that conversation? What does your manager want to hear when you're having that conversation? What are some of the key things perhaps that you should think about saying? Because, you know, your manager needs someone they're working. They want to, as you know, as you say, they want to know that you're still doing your job. So how do you reassure them?
It's almost a business case, isn't it? To put forward, this is how I intend to do it. This is the benefit you'll get, and this is what, you know, how it will, you'll get the best out of me, and nothing else is going to suffer. So it's sort of really presenting it in a way that they can understand that it'll work for them.
Okay. Let's talk about pay. You know, we had EG hosted this Connecting Tomorrow's Leaders event, and there was one panelist, James Shepherd from McDonald & Co., who said that there is a gender issue. Obviously, there's a gender pay gap issue as well, and that will never be resolved until perhaps employers start thinking about paying returning staff the salary that perhaps they should be on rather than what they left on. What are your thoughts?
Well, at Network Rail, we have something called transparent pay. So we have bands, and there are levels of pay within that. So anybody coming in, male or female, will fit into that banding. So on that basis, there shouldn't be a pay differential between men and women.
Even if they return with a, you know, with a bit of a gap in, so their technical skills.
So I suppose it depends what band they're going into. So yes, they may accept initially to take a lower band role, because it might actually suit them not to have that responsibility initially. I mean, for me, I worked in my previous band for the best part of 10 years bringing my kids up. I had I worked 3 days a week with inflexible hours, so I could do three sort of normal days, then I could be at home with them on the other days and do school pickups. And I didn't want that responsibility. I didn't want to step up to a more senior position. My children are now 13 and 14. They're more independent. They're at school for longer days. So it works. I can do more. So I've gone, oh, actually, I can step up. And, I've had the opportunity to do so in the last couple of years. And it's working. I still, even now, there's still issues with time management and how I sort of manage myself and that time without exhausting myself. And I'm afraid that cycle of exhaustion sort of goes up and down, I think, throughout your working life, depending on different pressures that you're under at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's always going to be the case for women, and I suppose that's one of the things you need to think about when taking a professional role, looking at your values, what's important, you know, whether you've got that itch to scratch to be more senior, or, you know, do you just want it to get some money, or, you know, how, you know, what are your values? And I had some really good coaching at some externally that really helped me to consider those things.
I also think, though, that there's a view of pay based on experience and length of service rather than pay based on capability. And just because you've had time out or not done a job for very long doesn't mean that you shouldn't be rewarded.
And, you know, like you said, you were developing skills even in your time off, weren't you? Some really valuable skills that you would apply in your job.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that time I had at the NCT was brilliant. You know, outside work, I've now taken on a school governor role. You know, it's sort of, you can get your experience in other ways, and they need to be recognised within the business.
Definitely. Without initiatives such as the Returner Programme, Kirsten, what do you think the impact on the industry is, and, you know, will be, without trying to encourage, you know, people who have gone off for a break, bringing them in? Who suffers in the end?
Well, I think the industry suffers by not having those people back in work. You know, if they can come back in on a flexible basis that works for them, you'd miss out on that talent. I think those people, if they want to, I mean, you know, I'm not suggesting all women who were chartered surveyors went off to have their families desperate to get back, but for those that want to, there's not an easy pathway back. So I think the returnship initiative is starting to offer that for people, because both, I think, you know, industry is recognising that those people could be helpful, and particularly with the women in terms of the gender gap, all the companies are going to have to consider this gender pay gap. And whilst I was saying about our transparent pay, that initially it shouldn't be any issue between women and men's pay coming into the company, it doesn't address the fact that we're still, I think we're 30% women, but actually when you look up the higher management bands, we're still back into off, you know, sort of probably that 14%, unless I suspect as you go higher up the hierarchy.
As women who are both established in the industry, how do you feel about initiatives, and there are many, about encouraging young talent into the industry? And do you feel like sometimes a sort of forgotten band of the workforce in the industry?
Rightly so. There's a real focus on bringing young people into the industry. You know, the residential sector, we talk about it being an ageing profession. You know, we're really pleased that countrywide, that through our trainee schemes, you know, 50% of our trainees are women, which is great. But we've got to look at retaining people, and the fact is they're not visible. And so a couple of months ago, we had an initiative in our business, a Women in Surveying initiative, and it started off with International Women's Day. We did a bit of a, you know, a Woman of the Year type award, and it was something that grew organically and enthusiastically. And we had some nominations from our regions, and they had a little profile. And as I looked through them, I thought to myself, why don't I know you? You know, you've had a similar career path to me. You've worked at the company a long time. You've had two children. Why don't I know you? And we, this is where the sort of the network bit comes back. But also what we then saw was that a lot of these women actually go into schools off their own back, and encourage women. And when you look at what inspired them to go into the industry, it was things like, you know, we had a conservatory done, and I was interested in what the builder was doing, or my uncle was a builder or something. There's always something really early on that inspired. And it's great that we do that and bring people in, but sharing those stories of what inspired someone, and that actually, you know, 20 years on, someone's still in the industry, still making a mark. You know, these can be careers for life, and I think it's important to share those stories.
Careers for life.
I think the majority of surveyors I know have been sort of career surveyors, and they've started out doing that. I went back to Sheffield and Hallam University after our 20-year anniversary, and we went back with some of our friends who were all gone into different areas of surveying. My husband actually doesn't practice anymore. I met him there. He trained as a surveyor. He doesn't practice, but the business that he's in, you know, all his property knowledge, obviously, and just the networking that still comes into play. And so, you know, it was interesting showing the students the different paths that you could go to. They don't, a bit like your event last week, sort of offering those opportunities of how you get in and what happens. And, you know, I went in very much, I was the only female out of our friendship group, and so very much targeted the girls, saying, you know, you want to think about your employer and that sort of flexible working. I've been very lucky working in the rail industry through the various guises of you know, to Network Rail, and had that family friendly policy that I have been able to have that flexibility. Things like that are really important.
I went to a round table event at a university last year, and they had some speakers talking about their careers, and then afterwards they had these sort of four tables, and the employers moved around and they asked us questions, and that was really great, because it was great to see, you know, the different variety of people in the property sector. But what really struck me was on a couple of the tables, we were asked, how do you cope with the men? To which I thought, well, what does that mean? I'm not beating them off with a stick, you know. But I do wonder sometimes if, in promoting sort of women in surveying and the gender, and it's, sometimes that can sort of, I wonder if it sort of backfires a little bit, that people think they're moving into a hostile environment. Mm. And that's where sharing stories and saying, yeah, it's okay, you know, yeah, there are ups and downs, that's life, but I've got a great career and I'm really content in what I'm doing, and you can do that too.
Yeah.
And I do wonder sometimes if...
Yeah, I mean, I've spent most of my life in meetings with me as the only female. Mm. I have to say, it's never really... bothered me. At least I'm always remembered. I might not remember all of their names, but they'll remember me as the only female sat in the room. But more and more I'm sitting in rooms with at least, you know, other women in the room, if not sometimes all women, and that is across Network Rail with engineers as well, which again is a heavily dominated, male dominated profession. So I think it's coming through, but I think, like you say, it's something about that early education, because when I went back to Sheffield again, there was probably third, if maybe a quarter, that were women still. And if they're not coming through into the university, we need to be capturing them and sort of inspiring them earlier as a, that it's an industry choice. But you did mention about people sort of high, you know, older generation who's still in the company, and in Network Rail I mentioned about the engagement stuff that we've been doing, and just recognizing that not everybody necessarily wants that promotional sort of opportunity. Some people are very happy dealing with their sort of day-to-day job, but actually offering people opportunities, sort of, we've been doing some development away days where we have some inspirational speakers and we talk about, you know, your colours and what type of personality you are, all things that help people communicate better, perhaps they understand themselves and other people better. So that, you know, so there's some personal development, and we're very keen on health and well-being, as I'm sure many organisations are now. And we had a guy come to speak at our development away day about mental resilience, and you know, that, which was fantastic. Think about, again, how you cope, and you know, how you manage your cases. So just personal development, I think, for people is as good as perhaps those opportunities for promotion, to keep people engaged in the company and wanting to stay.
I think that's something you mentioned earlier about coaching, and I think that's a vital thing for women to come back in.
Yes.
Particularly helping with the confidence and, you know, you said about, you know, a company that aligns with your values. You know, I think coaching is a really, really important thing, I think, particularly for women.
Yeah, it's really helped me, and it's helped me to step up to have that coaching. I've chosen different people within the organisation to help me, who've given me different nuggets, which I still hold. I've had coaching outside of the organisation. And I think just generally for your own personal development, I'd recommend anybody who has some time being, you know, with coaching or a mentor, just to see things from a different perspective.
Definitely. Well, that's a key part of the Returner program, isn't it? You know, you have a mentor and some coaching. Now, just to quickly go over that. So are you still taking applications?
So our applications closed at the end of May. So we've been going through our interviews, and hopefully we'll be being able to offer people slots by the end of this month is our aim, to get people started in September.
Great. And you'll do another intake next year?
So, yeah, we hope so. We hope this is, so far, we're really excited about what, you know, the sort of the interest and the candidates have been great. So we're really excited that it, you know, it looks like it will work. And so we'll obviously monitor the programme and see how it goes.
And it doesn't matter why you've taken a career break.
No. No.
As long as you've been away for 2 years, you're eligible. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman.
No.
You'll be taking applications for the next intake when?
Well, I suppose we did it for Easter, because to work to the September intake, thinking possibly, I suppose, again, possibly thinking it might be more aimed at women, and actually once that school term starts, it's quite a nice long run up to Christmas, to be able to focus and get used to being back at work and get used to your childcare arrangements, or, you know, whatever your personal arrangements are to start back at work. And then, you know, it's a decent long slot to get back, and then make a decision beyond that.
Okay. And if you just search Network Rail Returners Program, something will come up.
Yeah.
You can see the criteria to apply.
Yep.
And Marion, any advice for women who are taking maternity leave or a break from work? What can they do? while they're away from the workplace in order to feel like they're staying connected to their role.
So things like keeping in touch days are really important with companies, but also, you know, getting involved in different activities, you know, a committee of something, a branch of something, and adding that to your CV, it really does make a difference. And for me, returning, if I compare my two leaves and what I thought I was going back to, all I saw was details and problems and challenges and how I'd get out the door with one child. And, you know, I went back on from maternity the second time and I thought, I've got this nailed. You know, I can juggle these kids out the door. It's fine. And actually it proved to be much more challenging. And so what I would say is visualise how you think you want your career to be. Mm. Don't worry too much about the detail or look at the faults or the what ifs, but think about the kind of role that you want to be doing and work towards it. And I think the other thing for me that sort of really made a difference then into sort of career sort of progression and having two maternity leaves is actually really to think about what leadership means for me. So I always sort of thought to myself, well, one day I'll be a director. You know, that's the way to go. You go up the train and managers, directors. But when I looked back as to what I needed to get there, all I saw was faults. And I'd had time out and, you know, you then sort of look at your peers. But looking at what leadership meant for me through coaching really made a difference. And that's where I start to look at, well, I want to do things during the day that adds value to people, that makes a difference, that I enjoy. And that's helped me have a better perspective. And I've got involved in things like this. Mm. You'd said to me 12 months ago, would I be here? I'd have said, no way, I would have been tears on the train, you know. But
on the wrong train.
On the wrong train, yeah. Couldn't believe it. Obviously, it wasn't my fault. you know, but doing things that really add value. Because when you're away from your children, it's got to be worth it. And not everyone's fortunate enough to have a salary that pays big bucks, you know. So it's got to be worth it. And know you're making a difference, either in the job that you do or the people that you work with. And that's leadership, you know, helping other people to get where they need to be. And it can make a very valuable, rewarding career.
Mm. Excellent. And you mentioned your keep in touch days and really sticking to them. What sort of things should you be, how do you make the most of those days, those moments where you're back in contact with the employer? Are there certain questions you should be asking? What should you be there to find out?
Well, the keeping in touch days are sort of, I think there's a mixed view from employers as to what they're meant to be doing, because you're not meant to be there working. So for me, being involved in things like conference days, strategy days, would be more valuable than just coming to the office and sorting through the emails that I haven't looked at for a few months. And I think it's clear to talk to your employer about the kind of things you want to get out of it and to be included. But it's really challenging, maternity leave, because some women don't want to be bothered by their employer. They want their time alone with their baby. Others want to keep involved in terms of big decisions. As an employee, you don't want to put pressure on your employee to say, you know, how you know, do you want to be involved? Or there's rules around what you can and can't say. But so it's about keeping talking. Keep talking, you know, let them know you're interested. But I think the key things is, you know, those kind of company days, strategy days, are actually more important than just coming into the office, you know, and not doing particular tasks.
Interesting. Okay, then. I mean, I think we've covered it. That's some really great advice for people either returning or people who are going on leave and having a break and what they should be doing. So Kirsten Dury and Marion Ellis, thank you very much for joining us.
It took my very own mini Arianna Huffington moment for returning to work from maternity leave to realise that something just wasn't right. And if I was able to give advice to anyone about returning to work after having a baby, it would be to speak to your employer and ask for help if you need it. I have two children and enjoyed the benefit of maternity leave twice. The first time I worried non-stop about how I would cope when I returned to work, a situation I'm sure a lot of women are familiar with. And yet when I look back, I couldn't wait to get back to the office and get my life back. I started off part-time, and some days were hard, with working mum's guilt rearing its head often, but I always went to work and found a way to make things feel right. Half of Brits believe women receive fewer opportunities after returning from maternity leave. Fortunately, this was the opposite from my own experience. I had a 6-year gap between my two children. During this time, as a chartered surveyor, a member of the Royal Institution of Chartered Surveyors, my career had progressed well and my responsibilities increased significantly. With experience behind me, I was confident returning to work the second time would be plain sailing, like before, but that was not quite the case. Again, this is something that I know is shared experience among women who return to work after having a second child. Lack of sleep and travelling up and down the country took its toll. I found that although my most productive coffee-fueled hours were on the train, I still felt like I couldn't make headway. I started to wonder, if I couldn't keep on top, how can I progress? And if I can't progress, then what's the point? I felt at my lowest, least confident, and quite simply exhausted. My company was very understanding when I approached them asking for help in balancing my workload. We struck a balance where I'm full-time but don't need to travel as much and have more flexible hours. Working together helped me to relieve the pressure I was putting on myself to be the perfect employee and parent. It gave me a clearer perspective and made me feel much more valued in the office. While on maternity leave, I met new parents and grew my network, which was invaluable support. I missed this when I returned to work, so I set up a Women in Surveying group to support female colleagues up and down the UK, and I now mentor candidates on business and leadership development programmes. Not everyone is so fortunate when returning from maternity leave. It can be incredibly lonely, particularly if you're in an industry like surveying, where women make up just 14% of the profession. Through greater understanding and initiatives such as the RICS, Inclusive Equality Quality Mark, a voluntary scheme to help organisations create more diverse and inclusive workplaces, we can help our sector to drive change and attract and retain our best employees. Of course, this situation is not unique to surveying. There are women in industries who feel they cannot ask their employers for help and buckle under the pressure of being a working parent, so much so that they end up leaving work completely, and this is something that needs to be addressed. I'm fortunate, and over the last year I've learned what career progression and leadership means for me. As a working parent and woman in the industry, which is male dominated, I started to focus on things that add value to me and make a difference to people I care about. A year ago, I'm not sure I could have seen the light at the end of the tunnel. Now I have the support system I need to continue to develop my career, and I know I'm heading in a direction that makes me feel rewarded and valued at the company where I can make a difference.